Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. Several months ago, we promised to bring you more of the plays produced by radio man Dave Amaral, based on the short stories of Edward D. Hoke. I'm Janet Hutchings, EQMM's editor, and for 17 years prior to Ed Hoke's death in 2008, I had the honor of working with him on the monthly classical whodunits he wrote for our magazine. Ed had a very large and devoted following, of course, long before I met him, and the plays we've been bringing you in this series were all recorded before my time. Listening to them has been as much a pleasure and adventure for me as we hope they are for you. Here is The Problem of the Time Capsule, which was first published under the title The Problem of the County Fair in the February 1978 issue of EQMM.
A cheer came from the crowd as the Selkies appeared on the track. But something else had caught my eye, something white that fluttered in the breeze on the ground near the buried capsule. I dashed across the dirt track and onto the grassy oval. The thing on the ground was one of the books the school children had brought to deposit in the time capsule, a seventh grade arithmetic, and its pages were splattered with blood.
Time again for Sam Hawthorne, retired New England general practitioner, to recall another impossible crime, another miracle problem. Tonight, the problem of the time capsule. Now, Dr. Sam Hawthorne.
Well, say now, I was going to tell you about the time capsule this time, wasn't I? This here is a summer story, but it's liable to chill you to the bone. Why don't you pull up a chair while I pour us a small libation? Now, we hadn't had a killing in Northmont since that election day mystery I told you about last time. That is, not until the county fair of 1927. That was the year of Northmont's first time capsule. The capsule was Emma Thane's idea. She was the closest thing we had to a town historian.
In 1627, merchants from William Bradford's Plymouth colony set up a trading post on the present site of Northmont.
Since Northmont had always been eager to fill the sky with fireworks on the 4th of July, there was some debate as to how to celebrate the occasion. More fireworks? Bigger ones?
No, we should bury a time capsule to be opened 100 years from now. Gus Antwerp from the metalworks says he can make the capsule out of sheet steel and even bury it for us, all at no cost to the town.
The mayor and the town council were quick to accept the offer, and the time capsule was to be the highlight of the county fair. The old fairground was out on the River Roan, and a county fair in those days was always a big event with lots of crowd-pleasing attractions. The carnival sideshows with their scantily clad dancing girls, fortune tellers, and freak shows were always quite popular with the men and the boys, while the women went to the booths where the cakes and pies and needlework were on display. I never saw Mayor Chadwick without remembering how his predecessor had been murdered at a 4th of July celebration 3 summers earlier. Chadwick was a chicken rancher who had little use for the ceremony of politics. I was surprised that he even bothered to put in an appearance, until I remembered about the time capsule.
Well, howdy, Dr. Hawthorne. Mighty fine day, ain't it? Not a cloud in the sky.
Yeah, fine day. And there's a goodly turnout. I saw lots of cars from outside the county.
Yeah, it's the betting that attracts them, you know. You riding in the harness races this afternoon?
Not this year.
Well, I hope you bring something to put in the capsule.
Sure did.
Be seeing you there later.
I was lingering near one of the gambling tables when I spotted Gert Fryer, one of the livelier and more intelligent young women of Northmont. I'd made an effort to court her myself the previous summer, but her heart belonged to Max McNair. McNair had organized a group of musicians to play for square dances, and Gert had sung along with them. But after a few dances, where he'd had too much bootleg whiskey and beaten up some of the local boys, McNair had become quite unpopular in the community.
Oh, Sam, I've had the most wonderful news.
It must be news about Max.
He's coming home. He telephoned me from Cleveland 3 days ago. He should be here today.
It'll be good seeing him again.
I told Max about the time capsule. He said he'd be here for the ceremony.
Well, that's fine, Gert.
You've never really liked Max, have you, Sam?
You're probably the only friend he has left in Northmont.
Oh, I know. I've heard it all from my folks plenty of times. He's no good, and he drinks. But I love him, Sam.
I remember you were pretty broken up when he left town.
I guess it was the suddenness of it. One day he was here, the next day he was gone. He didn't even leave me a note.
Sheriff Lenz was going to arrest him for the beating he gave to Mayor Chadwick's boy.
I know, but he told me on the telephone that he's reformed now. He hasn't had a drink in months.
Good.
You will be friendly to him, won't you, Sam? It would mean a lot to me.
All right. For you, I'll be friendly to him. Say, it's almost noon.
We'd better get over to the grandstand for the ceremony.
We join the flow of the crowd toward the grandstand. Even the kids were deserting the rides and other attractions to witness this moment of history. The first person we saw as we entered the grandstand was Emma Thane, leaning on her knobby walking stick. She spotted Gert at once and blocked our path.
Well, Miss Fryer, your young man is back, I see.
Max?
Darn near ran me off the road with that truck of his.
Oh, where is he?
You tell that young man to be more considerate of people. If he's back in Northmont just to make more trouble, we'd just as soon he stayed away.
I'm sure he wasn't trying to harm you.
Folks hereabouts have the gumption to stand up to the likes of Max McNair. The law says no intoxicating beverages, and that law is the same for Max McNair as it is for you and me.
I'm sure he understands, Miss Thane.
Don't know that he does. Drove that road like he was drunk again, just like the old days.
Please excuse us, Miss Thane.
As we moved past Emma Thane into the grandstand, I got my first look at Gus Antwerp's time capsule. It was in the shape of one of those spaceships you see today, suspended upright from a block and tackle. It was about 8 feet high, and its bottom was set in a hall in the middle of the oval center of the racetrack. At its top, a hinged metal door stood open to receive the mementos of the community.
Good afternoon. Speaking for the Town Council of Northmont, want to take a few minutes to thank you all for coming to our county fair. This here's a sort of historic event, and to tell us more about it is Miss Emma Thane.
Greetings to our fellow citizens of Northmont, and to those of you who have come from neighboring communities from all over our great state. It was near the present site of Northmont that adventurous merchants from Bradford's Plymouth Colony first set up a trading post in 1627. In a way, it's our tercentennial, and Gus Antwerp of the Northmont Metal Works has constructed this time capsule to commemorate the occasion. It is my pleasure to deposit the first memento into the capsule. It is a copy of today's Northmont newspaper.
And now, we have here some of the kids from the Northmont Grammar School who will put some of their school books into the capsule.
I left Gert Fryer in the stands and made my way onto the field. As I neared the capsule, Gus Antwerp greeted me, shaking my hand with vigor.
Pleased to see you here, Doc. You got a little something there for my time capsule?
Medical records from last year at the grammar school. 100 years from now, they might be interested in what made our kid sick.
That's a great idea.
How long did it take you to build this thing?
One night, that's all. I just rolled a sheet and welded the seam, then fixed a flat piece to the bottom, and then put a door in the top.
And now, Dr. Hawthorne, who has some medical records from the Northmont School.
I climbed the dirt pile with my record book, taking time to peer down into the time capsule. With the sunlight from overhead, I could see all the way to the bottom, where the papers and books were forming a small pile. I tapped the thin metal walls with my knuckles, wondering if it would really last a whole century. I dropped my record book in and climbed down.
And now,
a few small kitchen utensils went in next, with some prize-winning recipes from the fair's bacon contest. A Sears Roebuck catalog and Mayor Chadwick's copy of the town charter completed the collection. The mayor closed the top of the capsule, and Gus Antwerp sealed it with his welding equipment. Then, like a ship's captain guiding his vessel through a narrow strait, Gus pulled out the support beneath the upright capsule and signaled for it to be lowered into the earth. There was a screeching of metal as it disappeared from view. Then, the mayor handed a shovel to Emma Thane and helped her throw in a symbolic load of earth.
Dr. Sam, you've got to help me.
What is it, Gert?
I've been looking all over for Max, and I finally found his truck, but he's not in it.
Oh, he's probably in the crowd somewhere.
I think there are bloodstains on the front seat of the truck.
Well, let's go take a look. There are bloodstains, all right. But there could be lots of explanations. He might have cut his finger, or it could even be animal blood.
Do you believe that?
Let's go take another look for him.
I have looked. I've looked everywhere.
All right, all right. Let's start at the beginning. Are you sure it was Max you spoke to on the telephone?
But why would he say he was Max if it wasn't?
I don't know, but long-distance lines can sound garbled at times.
No, no, it was Max on the telephone. I know it was.
All right, all right. Who else knew about the call?
No one.
Think harder, Gert. You told me when you saw me. Maybe you told someone else. Your boss?
No, there was no reason to tell Gus. Oh, he'd heard me mention Max, but he'd never met him.
How about Emma Thane?
No, why would I tell her?
I don't know. She just didn't seem very surprised about seeing his truck this morning.
Wait, there was someone I told. He saw me yesterday and asked if I'd be at the ceremony for the time capsule. I said yes, and then I mentioned that Max would be back for it, too.
Who was it you told?
Mayor Chadwick.
We decided to split up and take one more look around the fairgrounds. I found Sheriff Lenz not far from the main entrance and explained to him what had happened.
You really think something's happened to him, Doc?
I don't know, Sheriff. You had more to do with Max McNear than I did. Who were his enemies?
Well, Mayor Chadwick, for one. Max had given Chadwick's son an awful beating, you know.
Yes, I remember. Who else?
Heck, anybody Max met might have disliked him. He was that sort. Even Gert Fryer, if she caught him out with some 19-year-old behind the barn.
You mean, Max had taken up with another girl?
No one in particular, but I know there were some.
Was Gert working for Gus Antwerp back then?
No, Gus didn't move here till the fall. Max was long gone.
Sheriff, will you get some of your men and help us in the search?
Well, I can pass the word along to keep an eye out for him, but I think Gert Fryer's got you stirred up over nothing.
Most of the people were back at the grandstand. Even the gamblers had closed up their games and were busy taking bets on the races.
out in the center oval, Gus Antwerp and a few others were finishing the burial of the time capsule. The block and tackle still hung over them, like an empty scaffold. The first of the Selkies appeared on the track, but something else had caught my eye, something white that fluttered in the breeze on the ground near the buried capsule. I dashed across the dirt track and out onto the grassy oval. The thing on the ground was one of the books the children had brought to deposit in the capsule. A seventh grade arithmetic. And its pages were splattered with blood. I found Mayor Chadwick in the reviewing stand, watching the parade of the Selkies.
Well, you're just in time, Doc. Got your bets down?
Mayor, I...
Sheriff Lenz is driving one of those things, you know.
Mayor, I want you to order the capsule dug up.
Dug up? What in tarnation for? You forget to put some of your love letters in, Doc?
I'm serious, Mayor. Max McNear has disappeared.
Well, now, McNear disappeared a year ago.
And he's disappeared again.
Well, he sure ain't in the time capsule.
I have reason to believe that he is. I think the capsule was opened again after it was buried.
Impossible.
Impossible things have happened in Northmont before.
You're serious, ain't you, Doc? Well, let's go see what the sheriff thinks about this.
The sheriff was seated in his sulky, trying to button a green and white checkered silk shirt over his ample stomach.
Now, wait a minute, Doc. I agreed to this in a weak moment, and I don't need none of your jokes.
Doc ain't telling jokes today, Sheriff. He wants us to dig up the time capsule.
Dig up the capsule?
Sheriff, this book is supposed to be in the capsule, and I found it out in the field nearby.
Here, let's see that. Well, it looks like blood, all right. But what makes you think it has anything to do with Max McNear?
Let's call it a hunch.
I think you got a screw loose, Doc. But to tell you the truth, I'd welcome any excuse not to drive this fool thing. Come on, let's go dig.
We just buried it, and you want us to dig it up again?
Well, that's right, Gus.
And what happens when we get it dug up?
We want to open it and take a look inside.
You're crazy. You're all crazy.
The blood on this book is crazy, too.
But he couldn't be in there.
We want to take a look all the same.
All right. Boys, let's dig it up.
The men started digging, and I joined in. When we got the upper part uncovered, Antwerp got the ropes back around it.
We can probably pull it out with the block and tackle.
Get a team of them draft horses. They'll have it out in no time.
The team pulled the metal cylinder up in less than a minute. We lowered it to the ground, and Gus Antwerp went to work, knocking off the spot welds he'd made. Gert Fryer had come to watch as the time capsule was being reopened. The sheriff tried to keep her back, but she insisted on looking. I pushed forward to peer in at the impossible. There, among the items consigned to the 21st century, was the body of Max McNear.
I'm afraid this is going to put a bit of a damper on your fare, Mayor.
I reckon. But it sure was a darn clever way to hide a body.
What killed him, Doc?
A blow to the head with a blunt instrument.
Can you tell me when it happened?
Hard to say in this hot weather, but I'd say he was already dead when Emma saw his truck this morning.
Which means the killer was probably driving it.
Most likely someone who knew Max was coming back. You knew, didn't you, Mayor?
What's that?
Gert told you McNear was coming back today.
Well, now, she may have. I didn't pay much attention.
Say, where is Gert, by the way?
She passed out. Gus carried her over to the first aid tent.
The sheriff sheriff and I found Gert lying on an old army cot, her eyes closed. Gus Antwerp was holding her hand. A nurse from the hospital in Phoenix was seated at a small table.
Hello, Dr. Hawthorne.
I thought I'd look in on Miss Fryer.
She's still unconscious. I covered her with a blanket.
I keep telling her that it'll be all right, but she's just not coming around.
She's had quite a shock, but she'll be all right after a good rest.
Let's go back to the capsule for another look around. Well, Doc, what do you think?
I don't know, Sheriff, but there's got to be a simple answer.
Suppose there was two capsules, and this is the second one?
The books and papers are here. So is my medical log.
Then how'd the body get inside?
I think I know now.
Well, it's Emma Thane.
So, you figured it out, have you, Dr. Sam?
Hello, Miss Thane.
So you know how it was done?
I think I do.
He should never have come back. He wasn't wanted here.
Be careful of that walking stick, Miss Thane. Someone might mistake it for a blunt instrument.
Shouldn't have come back. The past simply caught up with him.
Oddly enough, I think it was the future that caught up with him.
The sheriff and I hurried back to the first aid tent.
Yes, Doctor?
Where's Gert Fryer?
Why, Mr. Antwerp is driving her home.
Come on, Sheriff. We've got to stop them. There could be another murder.
You don't mean that Gert killed Max?
Of course not.
But Gus never even knew him.
And that's why he killed him.
What? Why did Gus Antwerp kill Max?
Well, did you notice Gus holding Gert's hand? It's not so strange for a middle-aged man like Gus to imagine himself in love with his pretty young secretary. He feared Gert would be swept off her feet when Max returned, before he could do anything about it.
There's Gus' truck up ahead.
I think I can pull around him and force him off to the side.
He's trying to drag her out of the truck.
No, he's taking off.
I'll get him. Hold it, Gus.
Are you all right?
I guess so. Gus has gone crazy. He wanted me to run off with him.
Yeah, I was afraid of that. Once we found the body, he knew it was only a matter of time till we figured it out.
Yeah, Doc, I saw Gus go into the river. But I don't think he made it across.
Well, they're still looking, Sheriff.
I still don't get it, Doc. How'd Max's body get into the time capsule?
Well, you had the right idea when you said two capsules. Gus put Max's body in a second cylinder, which he had already buried beneath the capsule. After our mementos were in place, Gus pulled out the support at the bottom of the capsule, and everything dropped to the lower cylinder, which was open at the top. Then, Gus guided the capsule down so it fitted completely over the one beneath the ground. It was such a tight fit that when it was dug up, it looked like a single capsule. But when you examine it closely, you'll find that there are two thicknesses of sheet metal.
Well, how'd you figure it, Doc?
When I tapped on the capsule this evening, it sounded different, more solid. And I remembered the screeching of metal as it was being lowered into the ground.
How'd he do all that without being seen?
Well, it would have been easy last night when no one was around.
But how'd Gus know when Max was coming into town?
Well, Max must have phoned Gert at work. She was out and Gus took the call. Instead of giving Gert the message, he quickly made up his second cylinder, buried it, and kept the appointment with Max in place of Gert.
Then it was Gus driving Max's truck this morning when it nearly hit Emma Thane.
Uh-huh.
Well, I've heard of killers hiding bodies in some mighty strange places. But this is the first one I know who tried to hide it clear into the next century.
Well, they found Gus Antwerp's body in the river the next morning. And that was the end of the time capsule and the county fair of 1927. Another small libation? No? What's that? You're not satisfied because I didn't explain about the bloodstained arithmetic book? Well, it seems that one of the boys in line at the time capsule had a sudden nosebleed all over his book. He couldn't put it in the capsule like that, so he just dropped it on the ground. It had nothing to do with the killing, except that it got me to dig up the capsule and find the body. I like to leave that part out of the story. I sort of wish you hadn't asked. Say, you know, 1927 was also the year of the first talking movie. And just a few months after the fair, a movie company came to Northmont to make a talking picture. Yes, sir. And while they were here, one of the actors was strangled to death by an oak tree. Or so it seemed at the time. But I'm ahead of my story, and it's getting late. I'll tell you all about it next time.
Dr. Sam Hawthorne, produced by Dave Amaral, and based on the characters created by Edward D. Hoke, appearing in Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine. Heard in tonight's cast were Jim Harmon as Sheriff Lenz, with Bobby Warren, Fern Ridgway, Barbara Kovner, Vi Jameson, Lloyd Nesbitt, and Richard Scott as Dr. Sam Hawthorne. This is Robert Lasich, inviting you to join us next time for The Problem of the Old Oak Tree.
The Problem of the Time Capsule, which first appeared in Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine under the title The Problem of the County Fair in February of 1978, is copyrighted by the estate of Edward D. Hoke. Alterations to this dramatic adaptation, to make it suitable for podcasting, were done by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.themysteryplace.com/EQMM.